my dear.
Hello, Brother John, dear.
Bless you, my child.
And this is an unexpected one.
Not to me.
No.
Not to me at all is it unexpected. Indeed, I anticipated that you would be coming back to talk to us ere long.
Yes.
Perhaps sooner than you'd anticipated.
Well, I didn't recall the last one, unfortunately.
No. Never mind. You must forgive me a moment, please.
Yes.
Not quite. We were talking last time about the new contacts,
yes,
that we were endeavouring to make. In a sense, not new, but new from the point of being able to converse, as indeed I hope, particularly these friends that I have in mind will be able to so do, particularly our dear friend, Vale Owen,
mm-hmm,
who has a desire to contact and to converse, and I'm sure that he will have a great deal of import and of interest to convey, which will be of great interest and value to those in your world who are seeking truth. Of course, as you well know, there are always many complications and difficulties, and with one such as our friend who had so much knowledge of this truth while still on earth. Nevertheless, it is an extraordinary thing, particularly when one has been here, as he has, for a number of years, and has entered and settled into a new life, full of interest, full of opportunity, in which he has become very much immersed. When the desire and the attempt is made to communicate with earth again, it is not necessarily easy. Indeed, of course, it is never easy for any individual to make a contact. There are certain things that one must understand and certain problems that arise and difficulties that must be overcome. But it is much more difficult for some than others, even though they may have had a great deal of knowledge of psychic matters, as you term them. It is, of course, a matter of individual approach, individual being able to assert their personality, being able to break down certain barriers that are built up, sometimes unconsciously, but nevertheless very much so barriers. But indeed, there are so many problems in regard to communication, of which the average person on your side knows little or nothing about, and in particular in what is termed the voice. There are all sorts of complications, and it is, in a sense, more difficult. You see, for instance, there are so many souls from this side of life who are able to mentally communicate,
mm-hmm,
much better than they are able to communicate in a more physical way. Because when one communicates in a physical way, it means that one has to enter much more definitely material conditions and be associated with material things, and also the various other souls have to prepare the way, and there's a small group of scientists whose task it is to make it possible in the first instance to communicate.
Mm.
So much has to happen, which is in a sense much more on a material physical basis, and to those who have progressed to an extent on this side and who have learnt and are able, of course, to mentally communicate, for them, in a sense, it is more difficult, because everything which perhaps would not affect many people, would not in any way disturb them, one might say, for those who really spiritually progress, the material conditions around the earth, of course, are very, very difficult to pierce and adjust oneself to. It's almost as if in communicating in a material, physical way such as this, that you have to be conscious and be able to vibrate, I suppose is the word, on two, sometimes even three levels of consciousness and condition at the same time, which is not easy.
Yeah.
If you're thinking and creating, as it were, and manifesting in your own environment, on a certain level and wavelength to which you are accustomed and to which is natural to you, that is a simple matter. In a sense, one might say that it's true of Earth. It is easy for the average person on Earth, unless there's anything socially, organically, physically wrong with them, to manifest naturally, with freedom, without effort, on your plane, because they are, as it were, in tune and in harmony with it. They are physical and living under physical material conditions. And in whatever vibration you may be, whether it is on the earth, or whether it is on the astral, or whether it is on the more highly evolved spiritual planes, providing, of course, that you are in harmony with those conditions in which you are having your existence and being, then all is naturally smooth and comparatively easy. But it is this coming from spheres, far removed from Earth, transmitting oneself almost, you might say, in a physical sense, to manifest on a much lower, coarser rate of vibration and condition. This is the problem. Mm-hmm. And Owen, like many other souls here, who has made tremendous spiritual progression, find these difficulties, which we hope will be overcome. In my own case, of course, I have been communicating for such a very long time now that it has become almost second nature to me. I'm able to sort of manifest without any real effort anymore and transmit my thoughts and my message. And I can sort of accommodate myself to the extent that I can clear the way, or clarify, if you like, the atmosphere and conditions sufficiently to enable me to communicate within reason for some space of time when you have these sessions.
Yes, and I'm very appreciative of your effort.
But I do feel that there are many people in your world, even though they are spiritualists as such, who have some knowledge of this truth, and sometimes imagine they have a lot of knowledge, who do not realize how difficult it can be when one comes in a more physical way, a more physical sense of communication particularly, how difficult it is to become, as it were, on a level of consciousness, on a level of manifestation, so that that which we wish to convey is heard, in the case of the voice, or whatever the manifestation may form it may take, it is sufficiently made clear, made definite, and if it is materialization, indeed visible. See, there are so many problems which I think must escape a lot of people. There are many mediums who do not go into trances, who are conscious, as it were, of what is being said through them.
That's me.
Yes. And here we come up against, to some extent, a problem which, if the mediumship is of a good quality, and there is sufficient cooperation on the part of the instrument, and there is that rapport between the particular guide and the instrument, then all, generally speaking, is well. But, of course, one does have this, unfortunately, suspicion, perhaps, within oneself, if one's an instrument of integrity, of wondering how much is coming through clearly, how much is being conveyed properly. It is really very difficult for the instrument to be, I suppose, completely certain or sure within themselves how much they unconsciously can misinterpret or in some way inhibit, perhaps, the clarity of the message. This can only come with experience, this assurance that all is well from the point of view of the communication.
Yes, thank you.
And but I think it's so important that the instrument as such should have the absolute faith and confidence that they are being used, and that they are being, as it were, overshadowed, that they are receiving a clear channel, and that I think that if the individual concerned who acts in that capacity as the instrument, that if they have that kind of faith and they allow themselves to be used without any doubts and hesitations, the channel that is cleared makes it possible for the communication to be 100% or as near as it is possible to be. Of course, I suppose one might say, and we could truthfully say really, that in a sense, there is no such thing as 100% communication. I think somewhere there must be, even sometimes unconscious on the part even of the communicator, of some interference or some difficulty. We do not always know, of course, to the extent of how much we may succeed in our communication. And as you well know, that all communication in its basic form is a mental process of transmission of thought into sound, or whatever the method is used for communication. And it's quite a simple thing in the context of a sentence for one word to be translated into another form, which can sometimes even destroy the real intent of what was intended to have been said. But these are minor things, and I think that over a period of time, the conditions which are built between the communicating spirits and the guides in particular and the instrument are such that, generally speaking, the communication is of a very high order and quite successful. But with Valerian, I'm quite sure that he will make attempts at a later date to utilize your mediumship to convey messages and to speak through you. I want particularly him to come and talk here from time to time, because I know that the messages that you do receive do go out, they are heard and they are read, and I think that it would be a good plan and a good thing if Owen and perhaps several other souls could convey their messages, which will be, I'm quite sure, illuminating and helpful. And for many people who've had little knowledge of this subject, it will be, I'm sure, as you would say, something which will make them sit up and take notice. You know, it isn't that I'm discontented with us, you know.
No,
I would like you to think that.
No, I understand that, Brother John.
But you know, I've been coming and speaking to you for so many years, and though I love doing it and you love my coming, and we're both happy in the contact that we have together, I think occasionally it would be very nice if people like Owen and other souls could come, manifest, so that you could enlarge, in a sense, the scope of our work.
Yes. I want to say that a lot of people have learned to love you through my scripts.
Thank you. But I don't want you to think for one moment, or anyone to think for one moment, that I'm going to gradually recede into the background.
I jolly well hope not.
Of course, I'm going to stay very much the form. But from time to time, I shall bring visitors to discuss various things, which I'm sure will be of general interest.
Yes.
And if, in your travels and your communications with people, any questions that they might like to ask, if you bring them along, I will, if not myself, find other souls who would endeavour to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have sort of question and answer sessions,
yeah,
which would then probably bring various aspects of this truth to people, answering some of their problems and questions, which will, I'm sure, be helpful to many.
Mm. We had one this morning before you started.
What was that?
Bram was saying he didn't think everybody need necessarily be a vegetarian. What do you think about vegetarianism?
Well, if one has to break this problem or subject down to basic facts, in the first instance anyway, I would go as far as to say that I should imagine, and I'm quite sure this is so, would be a very good thing to be a vegetarian. But this may not necessarily be easy for many people, and indeed in some cases no doubt wouldn't be wise. I'm not suggesting for one moment that everyone should be a vegetarian. I think possibly over a period of time, and I don't mean just one generation, but over several generations of time, the ceasing to eat flesh, meat, would be a very good thing. But I don't necessarily assume that it would be successful for every person in one particular generation of time.
Mm.
I think this is the same thing in regard to what one inherits over generations. You see, many of the faults, many of the things that cause distress in life today are what has been handed down, are inherited from previous generations. And many of the evils of your world, many of the things that disturb and cause unhappiness, whether it's mental or physical, sickness or habits which have become in themselves pernicious, or perhaps have destroyed destroyed man's happiness or well-being. These things are often things that have been accepted and taken on from one generation to another. They've been inherited. Indeed, you might say, been born into children from generation to generation. And I think that this business of meat-eating, although I think an individual in their lifetime could be helped, and it would be a good thing for them not to eat meat and to depend on vegetation and the fruits of the earth, this would be a very good thing in itself. But the real, shall we say, benefit would not necessarily be felt perhaps for a generation or so later. In other words, I think that these things must take time to bring about their effect. Mm-hmm. I think that one has to rid oneself, not necessarily only physically, you say. And when you think of vegetarianism, you think of the physical aspect of eating, and in this case of not eating meat, but eating the vegetation and fruits of the earth and so on. This, of course, can be very good and very sane and sensible for the individual during their particular lifetime. But the real effect, shall we say, as a world cure, or bringing about a better understanding and a better way of life and a better feeling among men, which is, after all, what it should do, because it takes away the coarser self, part of self, the lack of the eating of the meat, this wouldn't necessarily be really felt to any great benefit to the human race, shall we say, perhaps for several generations.
Yes, even.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be a good thing for the individual to give up eating flesh, but also you must remember that the body has been accustomed to this since birth, and in a sense it's in the, in the bloodstream, it's also in the mental aspect, the necessity of eating flesh for many generations. Mm-hmm. You see, this is something you've got to eradicate from your being, mentally as well as physically. Mm-hmm. And though you may succeed physically, mentally, it can still have a disturbing element and effect because there still is the subconscious desire for meat. And also you're all the time associating yourself with the physical material and the meat-eating peoples. You see, I do not see things, this is difficult perhaps for people to understand, agree that everyone should individually make the attempt to alter, to change their mental and physical aspect of life, that they should endeavour to become mentally and spiritually better people. They should do everything as far as they personally are concerned to uplift themselves. This is excellent. But it doesn't alter the fact that one is still in the physical material world, one is still affected by material and physical things, and particularly by the thoughts and actions of people around you who do not see and think and act in the same way, or have the same feelings and emotions that you may have on these things. So in a sense that until this can become more general, though individually you may make progress, which is good and one should, it is the ultimate realization of all humanity working together harmoniously that matters. This is where the peace and the tranquility and the goodwill among men must be, where this is what we're aiming for. By all means, individually, people must progress, they must change, they must become better and more conscious of the realities and things that matter. But unless this is influencing the people around and about you to think and do likewise, and then individually you may make progress, but it's not achieving what we set out to do. In other words, everyone must try to influence those around and about them to think and act in the right manner, in accordance, in harmony with oneself.
Yes. But I know several people who are very dogmatic about it, and I don't think that is quite the attitude.
Well, I think in the first place, one of the most important lessons that one should learn in life is never to be dogmatic about anything. You may hold strong views, you may hold opinions that you feel are right, and in which you'd like others to participate and think likewise. But at the same time, we must remember the truth. The ultimate truth is a combination of many truths, in that in the process of change which must come as one grows more and more in mental and spiritual stature, there are many aspects of life which will affect one and which will affect those near and dear to you, and that which you may feel very strongly about today may still be and will always be a truth. In time itself, in the evolution of man, it will always be a fundamental truth, but it may only be a particle of truth, an aspect of truth.
Mm.
The greater truth is yet to come and to be revealed. These are stepping stones. One should never be too adamant about anything. One may feel that this is right for you, and it no doubt is. But though you may point the way to others, you cannot force them to accept. One must always be open-minded and open-hearted, but never be dogmatic.
Mm. I read a little piece only yesterday, supposed to have been said by Lord Balfour, and he said, never make a truth a house, but only a tent. The time would come when the Lord would say, take up your bed and walk.
Yes, that's very true. You see, so many people think they build a house with a few bricks. Well, it takes far more than a few bricks to build a house, and in any case, unless you've got jolly good foundations, even though you build a house of truth, it won't necessarily last. The foundations must be good.
Mm.
You see, it's so important for people to realize that all the time one is adding to one's knowledge, to one's experience, and truth is ever widening, ever opening up itself to greater vision and to greater realizations. It's no good trying to tie yourself down, saying you found the truth and that's it, and there's nothing else.
No, thank you.
One must always go searching. Realize that you're given a certain aspect of truth which will simulate, which is necessary, which is helpful, and no doubt is sufficient for the time being. But the truth is always broadening out and opening out for the seeking man or woman. One mustn't sort of be content. To be content in a sense is good, but at the same time you must realize that there is so much more to experience, so much more to learn. You cannot be truly content when you realize the immensity of life and the possibilities that must be there, waiting to be unfathomed and unraveled. The truth that we try to reveal to you, in its essence, is so tremendous, but the reality of it is so difficult to understand or express, even when one understands, and difficult even to appreciate fully. But we give you the best we can, here and there, our experience, that your horizon might be widened and made more clear. Never be prepared to stand still, for all life is change, all life is movement, motion. Indeed, it is essential to realize that it is this constant change, this constant reassessment of values and understanding more of different aspects of life and the widening vision that makes, indeed, which is life eternal. There's no such thing as being stationary, static. In the reality of spirit, all is new experience and change and wider horizons and vision. And one must never be too content in that sense. It's good to be content in a material sense to a given point, but one must remember that the more you seek, the more you shall find. Knock and it will be opened unto you. Do not think for one moment that you have all truth in your grasp. There are so many who have this realization, as they call it, and yet have not truly seen and have not truly been able to express that which they have seen. Do not be too content. Always remember that there is much more yet to learn, much more to experience. But anyway, as time goes on, we must have many opportunities of gathering together, and I'm very anxious that others should come and speak to you. I want them to give their own impressions and ideas and theories and explanations and everything they can that will be beneficial to all who may listen to this.
Yes.
Anyway, my dear, I must go.
Thank you. Well,
my blessings.
Sounds exciting.
Bye-bye,
you.
And my
bye-bye.
Love to every soul.
God
farewell,
bless.
Child.
God bless.
Very good, sir.
Yes. Goodbye, Mickey. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, dear.
Bye-bye.